She had done everything right. That is the part that makes this story hard to absorb. Tanya Warner was not undocumented. She was not here illegally. She is a Canadian citizen who married a United States citizen in 2021 and came to this country through the front door, with paperwork, with a spouse who is an American, with a 7-year-old daughter who was born in British Columbia and is also a Canadian citizen by birth. She had a path. She was on it. And then ICE showed up. And for 23 days, she and her daughter Ayla were held in a facility the Guardian calls notorious, because that is the accurate word for it, before being released Thursday on a bond of $9,500. I want to talk about what a 23-day detention in a U.S. immigration facility actually means, not in policy terms, in what happens to a child terms. The detention centers operated by Immigration and Customs Enforcement are not comfortable. They are not designed for comfort. They were designed for short-term holding of adult men being processed for removal. And over the past decade, they have been repurposed at scale to hold families, women, children, and people who have not been charged with any crime and who are in many cases asserting legal claims to remain in the country. The inspection reports that have come out of these facilities from the government's own oversight offices document inadequate medical care, overcrowding, insufficient food, inadequate hygiene supplies, and in multiple documented cases, sexual abuse. Ayla Luca is 7 years old. She spent 23 days in this system with her mother. The circumstances of how Tanya Warner came to be detained are not fully public. ICE does not typically explain its decisions. And the agency's explanation for why a Canadian citizen married to a United States citizen who moved to the U.S. through legal channels in 2021 was taken into custody and held for nearly a month has not been provided in the reporting I have seen. What is documented is that her husband, Edward Warner, an American, said, "Very happy to have my family home. It's been a whirlwind day," when she was released, which means he was not detained, which means the family was separated. A mother and a 7-year-old child, on one side of a detention center wall, an American husband, on the other. There is a category of legal immigration status that most people in the United States do not think about until it affects them directly. It is called conditional permanent residence. When a foreign national marries a U.S. citizen, and they have been married less than 2 years at the time of the green card application, the initial green card issued is not permanent. It is conditional, a 2-year card that must be converted to a full permanent residence by filing a joint petition with your spouse. If the relationship breaks down during that period, if the sponsoring spouse stops cooperating, if the petition is missed, if the government simply delays its processing, the conditional status can lapse. The person is then technically without status, even if they arrived legally, even if they married legally, even if they did everything right. I do not know if this is what happened to Tanya Warner. What I know is that the structure that created her vulnerability is documented and well understood. It is the same structure that has put thousands of women in mixed-status marriages in a position where their legal right to remain in the country depends on the continued cooperation of the spouse who sponsored them. When the system works and the relationship remains intact, it is fine. When either of those things shifts, when a spouse becomes uncooperative, when paperwork is delayed, when the government's priorities change, the woman who followed the legal path finds herself in the same position as someone who never had paperwork at all. This is a known failure mode. It is documented in immigration legal aid organizations' case files. It is documented in academic research on domestic violence and immigration status, because the conditional period creates a specific coercive vulnerability. A sponsored spouse can threaten to withdraw the petition, which means a woman can be kept in an abusive relationship by the threat of deportation. The government has addressed this specific scenario with hardship waivers. But the broader vulnerability of a woman whose legal status is contingent on circumstances outside her control persists. Tanya Warner's case does not appear to be a domestic abuse situation. Her husband is publicly expressing relief at her release. The family appears intact. The detention appears to have been the result of some administrative or enforcement action whose details remain unclear, which makes the case in a way more disturbing. because if this can happen to a Canadian citizen married to an American, with a legal entry date, with an intact marriage and a supportive spouse, without any public explanation being offered, then the category of did everything right has ceased to offer the protection most people assume it does. Ayla Luca did not choose any of this. She did not choose to be born in British Columbia, or to move with her mother to a new country when she was 2, or to be taken into immigration detention at age 7. What she will remember, whether she can articulate it or not, is 23 days of institutional life at the age of 7. What that does to a child's attachment system, to their sense of the world as safe, to their relationship with authority, is something the researchers who study childhood trauma have been documenting for decades. They call it toxic stress. They describe the neurobiological effects of prolonged uncertain threat on developing brains. None of that language appeared in the ICE detention order, if there was one. None of it will appear in the administrative record of Tanya Warner's case. What will appear is the bond amount, $9,500. That is the number that an immigration judge determined separated a 7-year-old girl from the facility where she had spent 3 weeks with her mother. Edward Warner said he was very happy to have his family home. The question that the reporting does not answer, and that the system has no mechanism to answer, is what happens to the families where the husband is not supportive, or where there is no American spouse to call a whirlwind day, or where the $9,500 is not available, or where the woman came from a country that is not Canada and whose case does not receive coverage in a major international newspaper. What happens to those women? And what does it tell us about who this system was designed to protect, when the one who did everything right still needed a bond to go home?